hear us out, we are excited to introduce Kimberly Dowdell, a proud mom of four, passionate Zumba instructor, and a fierce advocate for inclusion, especially when it comes to her son Jack, who was born with Down syndrome. Through her presence on social media, Kimberly shares Jack's story with honesty, warmth, and a deep sense of purpose. She uses her platform to educate others about Down syndrome and remind us all of the importance of creating a more inclusive world. In this episode, we'll talk to Kimberly about navigating advocacy as a parent, building community online, and the lessons Jack teaches people across the globe. So Kimberly, thank you for coming on the podcast today. We're excited to have you.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
You start all the way at the beginning, when you first found out about Jack's diagnosis, how you were told, and all the emotions that came with it.
So Jack is our youngest. We have four children, and he is the youngest of four. You know, I did all the normal things during pregnancy that you do, and there was never any detection during ultrasounds or anything like that, that he had Down syndrome. When he was born, I remember right after he was delivered, just kind of looking at him and thinking, something looks different, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And all babies kind of look really scrunched up and squishy and can look kind of funny when they're first born anyway. So I just attributed it to that. And as the nurses do, they take the baby and they check all their vitals and all of these things. And the nurses were kind of talking in really hushed tones. And I remember the doctor, as the nurses are doing their thing, the OB, he said to the nurses, is there a heart murmur? And they said, no. And I remember thinking, well, good. I'm glad there's no heart murmur. But also kind of wondering why he asked that. I had delivered him so fast that my epidural didn't even have time to take effect. So I actually, it was like giving birth naturally. But then after he was born, I was completely numb. My legs were numb. So I was in the delivery room for a while after he was born because I couldn't get up and I couldn't move. I remember the pediatrician walking in really late at night. I delivered him around 9 p.m. and the pediatrician came in. It was close to midnight. And he came in exclaiming, I hear that he looks like Blake. So everyone up to that point had been saying, does he look like any of your other kids? And I thought, it doesn't look like any of my other kids to me. But, you know, my sister had said at the time, because she was there with me when I delivered him, she was like, he looks like Blake. And then my mother-in-law, when she came in to visit, she said, he looks like Blake. And I remembered thinking, okay, if you say so, I don't think he looks like any of my other kids. And so the pediatrician comes in and he exclaims, we hear that he looks like Blake. And I thought it was so funny that he came in saying that. But I thought, you know, whatever. They like to know who the baby looks like. And so I'm there in my delivery bed, still unable to move, but I'm holding the baby. The pediatrician comes in and he stands right across from me. And he just kind of leans up against the counter and folds his arms. And he says, so I don't know if you overheard the nurses or overheard me talking to the nurses, but we think your baby has Down syndrome. And he just said it just like that, just matter of fact, just like that. You know, this is another part of the story, and it's kind of a long part, but my husband actually wasn't with me when I delivered Jack. He had just started a new job, and he was actually in Chicago, and I went into labor earlier than we had planned. We had a planned induction, so he wasn't even there with me. So I was just there with my sister. So I was receiving this news all by myself. You know, after you've had a baby, you're just so exhausted emotionally and mentally. And then the fact that I didn't have my husband there with me, I was already really upset about that because I didn't want to deliver the baby without, you know, my number one fan. So he says this to me and I felt my body, it was almost like an out of body experience because I just kind of felt like he had just crushed all of the dreams that I had had in mind for this child that I had just given birth to and all of the hopes and plans for the future that I had dreamed of for him. All of a sudden he crushed them. And I didn't know what to say. I couldn't even get any words to come out of my mouth. And I looked up at my sister because she was standing right next to me. And I looked up at her and I was trying really hard not to cry. So with tears in my eyes, I looked up at her and she just looked at me and she said, it doesn't matter. And that was exactly what I needed to hear in that moment because I was completely washed over with fear in the moment of the unknown and grief for the baby that I thought I was going to have. And then he looked at me and he could tell that I was distraught and he didn't know what to say. He was really uncomfortable with the way that he had delivered the news himself. And I think that he saw that it made me upset. And so rather than like comforting me or saying, this is why we think the baby might possibly have Down syndrome, he just said, well, I don't know why I said that. I shouldn't have said that. I'm so sorry that I said that. He probably doesn't. So just try and get some sleep tonight and we'll talk more in the morning. And then he left. And that's how he left me. And so I just was left sitting there thinking about worst case scenarios and what this news meant for us that he had just delivered to us. And then also wondering, well, maybe he doesn't have Down syndrome. Does he have Down syndrome? I don't know. And then the rest of the night, I didn't sleep a wink because there were all these unknowns just kind of left in the air.
You are shifting the direction of their life with this news that you're giving, and you need to respect what that moment is, and you need to respect the message that you need to convey. And I actually am not so reactive to his matter-of-fact delivery of that because I think the matter-of-fact delivery can help to convey the message. As a clinician, the idea of being reactive to your patient's reaction is what I find so off-putting. That
Right.
you need to be clear in the delivery of that message. You need to be clear that this is what we think is happening here. And you can be empathetic with that. You can be empathetic in understanding that this is not what this family is expecting to hear. But to take that step back, that whether it gives you hope or gives you a lack of clarity, is so unfair and creates such confusion that is so inappropriate that any clinicians that are listening to this, you have to understand what you are doing when you are telling a patient something you know they do not want to hear. Along with that, there are tests that are done pretty routinely within ultrasounds to identify it. And one of the things that are looked for is Down syndrome. And you had said that you went for that testing. Was any part of you angry with the medical system and the doctors you had encountered for not giving you or opening your eyes to that information as soon as could possibly be done?
A lot of it is on my part. I think it was being a little bit naive. It was my fourth child. And up to that point, all of my babies had been born healthy. And I had always turned down the blood test because I thought, in my mind, I thought, well, what does it matter? I'm going to keep the baby no matter what. So what does it matter? And now looking back, I really understand why we do those blood tests. And looking back, I wish that I had, because not only does it allow you to like have time to process the diagnosis, but it allows you to prepare if there are things that the child is born with. Like, children with Down syndrome can be born with heart defects. In Jack's instance, he was actually born where his stomach wasn't attached to his intestine. That's a whole story in itself where, yes, I do blame the medical community on not diagnosing that and figuring it out. But also on my part, like I could have done my research, or maybe the doctor could have explained to me better, this is why we do a blood test. It's not just so that you can abort the baby if if you are unhappy with the results, but this is actually how it can be helpful and useful to you. As far as the ultrasound goes, we were living in a really small town at the time. And I honestly feel, in my own personal experience, we now tell people, if you have an emergency, that's not the hospital that you want to go to. I would keep driving and go to this place or to this place, just because there were so many things that were missed. And so, did the ultrasound tech not do her job? Possibly.
I feel like a 12-week ultrasound.
I don't know.
Think, yeah, you look for a heartbeat and
It
then they measure
was,
the
yeah.
neck.
So I don't know. I mean, did she not measure the neck correctly? Did she miss the gap between the toes? He didn't have any heart defects, but his stomach wasn't attached to his intestine, which probably could have possibly been detected. We had a couple of ultrasounds.
A 20
So
week, I would think, could pick that up.
yes. So is there negligence there? Probably.
So after the initial shock of it all, and once it was confirmed, how did you then pull yourself together and move forward with that news?
You know what? I didn't really have time to pull myself together right away because, so we received the phone call over the phone telling us that the blood work came back positive, that he does have Down syndrome. And then it was like, so what was going on at home during that time was Jack was constantly throwing up over and over and over again, couldn't keep any food down. And I was just like not sleeping at all. I was either pumping because I couldn't get him to latch on, or I was making him a bottle or setting my alarm to wake him up because he couldn't keep any food down. And I was so stressed to just try and feed this baby. And I was taking him in several times throughout the week to have him weighed and to talk to the pediatrician about how we could get him to keep his food down. And this pediatrician actually said to me, this is the same pediatrician that delivered the news.
That was my question.
He said to me at the time, he said, you know, sometimes these babies with Down syndrome just have a harder time holding down their food. So you are just going to have to feed him a tablespoon every 20 minutes and hold him upright to make sure that he keeps it down, and then feed him another tablespoon. Something that you have to realize too is that we rely on doctors. We rely on them to be the experts, to know what they're talking about. I didn't go to medical school. I did not have any knowledge of individuals with Down syndrome whatsoever. So I was relying very heavily on this pediatrician and the advice that he was giving to me. And so when he told me to fortify the breast milk, I did that. When he told me to feed him a tablespoon every 20 minutes and then set my alarm and feed him again and hold him upright, I did that, and I was not getting any sleep, and he still continued to throw up and not keep any food down. And I remember my parents, they have a really good friend who is a neonatal specialist, and they had reached out to him when Jack was first born and said, hey, like, what are some of the things that we should be asking about? What should we be looking for? He said, well, number one, you want to have the heart tested. Number two, you need to have the intestines checked. And number three, they can have some thyroid issues. So I had actually said to the pediatrician, okay, like, let's have his heart tested and let's have his intestines looked at and let's check the thyroid. And he said to me when I brought up, he says, okay, well, we'll schedule an echo for his heart. But is he pooping? And I said, well, kind of. Like, he wasn't having like large bowel movements, but he was passing that meconium a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, a little bit. And he says, okay, then you're fine. You don't need to have, we don't need to check his intestine. Well, now we know that, like, no matter if you're eating or not, your intestines are going to turn over every 24 hours. So you will have a bowel movement, even if you are starving to death. So after 2 weeks of Jack constantly throwing up and not being able to keep anything down, I finally called the pediatrician's office. I had taken him earlier that day, and the pediatrician wasn't there. And the nurse weighed Jack and looked at his chart and thought that the scale was broken. That's how much.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
He had lost. So then he took me to another room to weigh him, and then saw that the weight was the same as it read in the other room. And I could tell by the look on that nurse's face that he was really concerned. Jack had lost 1.5 pounds, which for an infant, a newborn, is a
huge lot.
That's huge.
He should have gained 2 pounds in that time.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I talked to the pediatrician that night, and I told him, I said, I just feel like something is wrong. He looks really thin. I think maybe he's dehydrated. And the pediatrician said to me, well, why do you think that he's dehydrated? And I said all the reasons. And I said, I feel like I need to take him to the emergency room. And he just kind of said, well, if that's what you think, then go ahead. So I did. I took him to the emergency room that night. And let's just say a lot of misdiagnoses later, he ended up at Primary Children's Hospital. So we were in Southern Utah. We ended up being transported by an ambulance up here to Salt Lake City. And when we arrived here at Primary Children's, you know, they're the expert children's hospital. If you're going to have any type of emergency with your child, that's where you want to go. And when they got him there, they couldn't believe how severely dehydrated he was. And they said, well, before we can do any surgery on him, they said, we've got to get him well. And they said that he was the second worst case of dehydration that they had ever seen come through the emergency room. I mean, this was 14 years ago. So it's been quite a while. So I'm sure they've had worse cases now. And they said, and just so you know, they had diagnosed him in Southern Utah with having pyloric stenosis. And when I got to Primary Children's, they said, the surgeon said to me, he said, this is textbook. Your pediatrician should know this. And he said, when he called me telling me that he was sending a baby with Down syndrome to the hospital here for surgery for pyloric stenosis, I told him, this is textbook. That's impossible. This baby has duodenal atresia. And so I said, well, what does that mean? And he said, well, his stomach isn't attached to his intestines. Had he been born here, he would have immediately gone into the NICU, regardless of being diagnosed with anything, but we would have sent him immediately to the NICU to run all of the tests, and we would have discovered that he had the duodenal atresia. But he said that's why he hasn't been able to keep any food down, because everything's been pooling in his stomach and it can't go anywhere, and so he throws it up. Once we found that out, I was so angry that it had taken 2 weeks to diagnose. And honestly, if I hadn't have followed my gut and just taken him to the emergency room, Jack probably still wouldn't be alive.
His instinct knows. And it's also not every medical professional knows everything, but then it's their responsibility if they don't know to refer them to somebody who would. I feel like that's where the pediatrician went the most wrong, that if he wasn't fully confident, it sounds like he was confident, but if he wasn't, he should have referred elsewhere.
I say that to people all the time. I would have been happy if he would have just said, look, I am not familiar with Down syndrome. Let me do some research. You know, we're going to figure this out and we're going to go the right direction. But, you know, just as if he'd have been upfront with me and we were doing our research together, but he was so confident that he knew, but he actually didn't know. And I think that's what's so frustrating. And the surgeon actually said to me, he said, you know, when the dust settles, you need to have a conversation with this pediatrician, or you could pay someone to do that for you. That's what the surgeon actually said to me. It was very interesting.
Now, over time, how has Jack and his diagnosis and his upbringing, how has that affected your other children?
My other kids have never known anything different. They were so young when Jack was born. Our oldest, I think she was 8. At the time. So they've never known any different. I remember we sat down with them when we received the diagnosis, and we just talked to them about what Jack's life would be like and that he would probably need a lot of extra help, and that we knew that they were up for the task and that they would be amazing older siblings to him. And they always have. They've always stepped up and they've always helped Jack in whatever way that he needs. And I think being a sibling to a child who has special needs, I think it's made them extra empathetic. I think not just with interacting with other kids who have special needs, but I think their own friends and people in the community that they come in contact with. I've noticed that my kids are just extra sensitive, extra empathetic, go the extra mile to help other people. And I really attribute all that to being Jack's older siblings.
I can imagine that in certain situations, young kids like that would think, well, why are my parents paying more attention to him than they are to me? But it sounds like they really, from the get-go, have been supportive and wanting to help him thrive. My favorite videos that you post are always when your other kids are surprising him at other places.
Yeah. You know what also is that Jack has this magical quality of people feel seen and feel loved. And because Jack is so, he doesn't care what other people think, right? So he doesn't wake up in the morning and say, man, I got Down syndrome. You know, like I wish that I didn't have Down syndrome so I could do this or that or whatever. I think that we're the ones who place the idea of what Down syndrome is in our own heads and in each other. And we are the ones that think, oh, you know, will Jack ever be able to do this? Will he be able to participate in that? But Jack doesn't do that. So because he doesn't do that, and he wakes up in the morning excited for the day, he always starts out his day singing and laughing. And I think his siblings watch the way that he is. And I think they've learned so much from him in the way of, I should spend my day being more like Jack. I should spend my day being more optimistic and sharing joy with others. And I think that has impacted them so much that they truly see him as a blessing. And they just want to spend more time with him because he makes them feel so good about who they are and the accomplishments that they're doing in their own lives, because he gets excited about the simplest things that he does. And then one thing about Jack is he remembers everybody's birthday month. And so when it's the first of the month, he starts telling you happy birthday, and he's going to tell you happy birthday all month long until you get to your birthday, because that's how excited and happy he is to celebrate you. And I think because he's that way, they get excited to celebrate him and celebrate the little and small victories that they have in their own lives.
Can you talk a bit about the initial motivation to create your Instagram page and share your story and his story with the world?
Bet. It was actually, it's so organic. I don't know if other people's accounts have grown this way, but I made my account public in 2020, and we all know what happened in March of 2020, and we'll probably get into this, but I'm a Zumba instructor and I wanted to continue to connect with my participants, even though we were all at home and we weren't at the gym. And so I made my account public and I started teaching my classes online and doing Instagram lives. And then I switched over to YouTube and would do YouTube lives. And my following started to grow a little bit during 2020 because of that conflict that we were all experiencing. And then as life kind of started to go back to normal, I left my account public. And my daughter left in 2020 to go to college. We were kind of thinking, oh, she's going to go to Idaho. COVID is going to be different in Idaho than it is here, where in fact, it was just the same everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't less aggressive there, but she went to college and we all missed her and Jack missed her. And he'd get so excited when she would come home. And then 2 years later, his older brother, Luke, left to go to college. And so now we had two kids who were living away and that Jack really missed. Jack just has this really special connection with Luke. He does with all of his siblings, but there's just something really special about him and Luke in particular. And Luke was coming home to visit. And I said to Jack, Luke's almost here. And he started to just get light up and get so excited. And so I pulled out my phone and I started to record Jack's reaction. And Jack's on the porch and he's waiting for him. And Luke has this car. It's a 1993 Nissan 300ZX that he fixed up. He thinks it's the coolest car. Jack thinks it's the coolest car. People online think it's the coolest car. Anyway, so when he pulls up, it's the roar of the engine and all the drama as he's waiting for Luke to get all of his things out of the car. And so I capture this all on video. Then they hug and Jack's just so excited. It's just this really heartwarming moment of these two brothers reuniting. I shared that video. I made a reel out of it. And I remember like waking up the next morning and being like, wow, it has like 100,000 views. You know, I'd never had a video do something like that. And then the views just continued to climb. But not only did the views continue to climb, I was gaining all of these followers. By the end of the week, it had 1 million views. And I was like, this is insane. Like, I cannot believe that I had a video reach 1 million views. And it just continued to climb. And I think it ended up reaching to like 5 million views or 6 million views, somewhere around there. And my following continued to climb as well. And so my initial thought was, I am going to take this and I'm going to run with it. I saw it as an opportunity to advocate for the Down syndrome community and to show the joy that individuals who have Down syndrome bring into our lives every single day. Because people watch that video and they would comment things like, oh my gosh, I was having a really bad day. And then I saw this video and it turned my day around. Or you have no idea, I was experiencing this. And then I saw this video and now my perspective has changed. And so I just continued to create videos and I thought, you know, oh, I'll just have luck with, it was just luck that I, that one video took off and went viral. And now I probably have over 100 million views across or more across all platforms. I haven't even counted it up in a long time, but it's insane. And I just really feel like we've been blessed and I feel really lucky that I get to advocate and share our lives on social media. But I think there's always a reason for everything. I don't think it's by coincidence. I think that it's probably some sort of divine design that all this happened. And anyway, that's how I got started. And I just think that it's really amazing.
Do you get any pushback from people in terms of it being not just you, but also a child?
Yes. So there have been occasional messages that they'll slide into my DMs saying that I'm using my son for views or that I'm using him to make money. I mean, let's let the record be straight. I mean, you don't make hardly any money off of your views. You don't make anything on Instagram. And on the other platforms, you have to reach a certain following before you can even monetize your account. And it's not at every video you get paid the same. So yes, I have gotten some comments like that. Oh, you're just using your son. You're a terrible mother because you're setting this up. And I will have friends who actually know us and know Jack, and they know that there is no way that I could ever arrange for Jack to react a certain way in any video that I post because he has a mind of his own. And if he's in a bad mood that day, it is not going down. It is not happening. He can't just turn on the charm. I mean, most of the time he is in a really good mood, but Jack is just like the rest of us. He gets grumpy. He has attitude. He's a teenager, tells his parents to shut up or to leave him alone, just like all other teenagers do. And so everything that you see is 100% Jack's true reaction. And I just continue to share because despite the negative comments that I get occasionally, which it's maybe like 1%, mm-hmm. I feel like what I'm sharing, I'm doing a greater good that needs to get out there and needs to be seen. Because when Jack was born, we didn't have Instagram. Facebook was kind of a newer-ish thing. Even YouTube was newer. What I would have given to seen a video like what we put out there for families who have children or just receiving diagnoses of having babies with Down syndrome, because I would have loved to have seen that. It would have given me so much comfort. And that's the whole reason why I share, is because I remember praying for a glimpse. If I could just have a glimpse of what his life is going to look like in the future, then I would tell myself, then I feel like I would be okay. And I actually did get a small glimpse of my own when I ran across a YouTube video. Jack was probably like almost a year old. There was this young man in Whittier, California, and he had put together a day in the life video for his senior project. And his parents followed him around and took video of him going to the YMCA and swimming laps independently. He rode his bike there. He came home and he made himself a smoothie, and he had this whole way that he organized his clothes in his room. So he made sure he had clean clothes on every day. And he would then he'd like take the trash out and go walk his dog. And I remember watching that video and just being in complete awe, because like I said, I hadn't had any interaction with anyone who had Down syndrome. So I really didn't know what to expect when it came to Jack and what his life was going to look like. And I watched that video and I said to my husband, if Jack's life can be anything like this young man's life, then everything is going to be okay. And now I see what I'm doing as a way of giving other people a glimpse. And I get messages all the time from new parents who say, I am 20 weeks pregnant and I am so scared. I just received a Down syndrome diagnosis in utero. I discovered your videos and I've done a deep dive down your page and watched video after video. And I know that everything's going to be okay because I saw this video and you've given me so much hope. And then I'm able to connect with them. And here I am. I have a 14-year-old and I can give them all these thoughts and relate to them and tell them that it's going to be okay, that they have so much to look forward to. And for that reason, I'm going to keep sharing, because I think that's more important than what the naysayers have to say.
One of the intriguing parts I find of your channel is when you also show the not as happy moments, like when he's getting a haircut and it's a challenge and you're holding him and finding mm-hmm. these different methods that you're trying to help him with. How is it for you to share those moments? Is it helping others get more of a glimpse of all of what Down syndrome encapsulates, to show both the really happy moments and also the more challenging moments?
I mean, that's what we're really trying to do, because I want to keep it real. I don't want to just say every day is blissful at our house with Jack, because there are challenging moments as well. And we actually talked a lot about whether or not we should share those videos, because for years, if anybody were to see what giving a haircut actually looked like, they would probably be like, man, I can't believe that they're holding him down like that. They would probably think that we were being abusive, because we literally would have to hold him so that he wouldn't move and so that we would cut his hair. And on some of those videos, people have commented and say, well, why are you making him have a haircut if he doesn't want to have a haircut? Why are you making him get a haircut? And it's just such an odd question to ask. Like, if your child didn't want to clip their fingernails, would you just never clip their fingernails? Would you just let their fingernails grow until they were insanely long? If your child doesn't want to brush their teeth, do you just never brush their teeth and let them get cavities? And, you know, for children with Down syndrome, I mean, he still wants to look handsome. He really likes the way that he looks after his hair is cut. He just has a really hard time with having his head touched and with the noise of the clippers. And it's hard to know what's going on in his mind when he's having all of these sensory sensitivities. But we decided we're going to share this because I know that there's other parents out there, whether or not their child has Down syndrome, it could be other sensory sensitivities like with autism and other things. But we want them to know that they're not alone and that we have found some tools that have really worked for us. And maybe this is what could also help them. But more than anything, just let them know that they're not alone and there is hope in sight.
So as I listen to you talk about your experience with Jack and also your sharing what seems like more of his full story, that it's not just the rosy days, it's the difficult times as well. It seems like a common thread with parents who are going through this, that there are a lot of fears. And it's important for parents to see the joys that they can experience in spite of a diagnosis. But can you also speak to your fears that maybe looking to the future and what concerns you might have that, hey, maybe other parents share those as well, and to hear somebody else voice those concerns can also be meaningful?
Absolutely. So when Jack was born, like I've said, I didn't know anyone who had Down syndrome. So I was really terrified about what the future would look like. And the neonatal specialist that I talked earlier about, when my parents called him, he actually said to my parents, he said, well, did you know that I have a 27-year-old son who has Down syndrome? And my parents did not know that. And he said, let me just tell you from personal experience, he said, it's okay to grieve for the child that you thought you were going to have. And until they said that to me, I felt like something was wrong with me. I felt like it was really abnormal to have the feelings that I was feeling, and that I was just supposed to accept it and be happy about it and feel okay. Because shortly after Jack was born, after they'd moved me to my room at the hospital out of the delivery room, the nurses were so nice, and they honestly, they meant well. But what they kept saying to me was, this is going to be so amazing. Like, you are so lucky. And what they didn't realize was, by them saying that to me at that time, was that it just was like digging a knife deeper into an already open wound, because I hadn't gone through all of the process of the emotions yet. And I didn't feel like I was lucky. And then by them telling me that I was so lucky made me feel even worse, because I wasn't feeling that way. And I wasn't feeling excited. And I wasn't feeling like this was going to be an amazing experience, an opportunity for our family. All that I could think about was the things that he possibly wouldn't be able to do or wouldn't be able to participate in. What was this going to look like for our family? What type of challenges was he going to have in his life? And were my other kids going to be okay? And would Devin and I be okay? Because you often hear marriages end in divorce with parents who have a child with special needs, because it can add an extra burden to the family. And sometimes those burdens, the parents can't get along, and they just can't get through it together. And so there were just so many unknowns. And once I got through the grieving process, I knew I was allowed to grieve. I just kind of told myself, I'm just going to take this one day at a time. Then I took it 1 week at a time. And I just have allowed myself to take it at my own pace. And even right now, I'm not worrying about where he's going to be at 25 years old or at 35 years old. I can't allow my brain to think even yet what will happen if, you know, God forbid, like something happens to Devin or I, because those are things that can really like weigh me down and put me in a place that I just don't want to be mentally, because I think it's really easy as parents to get to that place. And so I try to stay really positive. We try to create opportunities right now that are beneficial to him. You know, like we do a lot with his typical peers at school. And we're trying right now to create lasting friendships and opportunities that will hopefully bridge over to his future, so that hopefully when we get there, things will be a little bit easier and easier to navigate for him and for us as well. Okay.
There was this one story you had posted a while ago now that maybe Jack watched a movie or something where he was watching somebody who had a family and kids, and now he was looking forward to having that one day. And you were talking about the heartbreak in that he might not achieve every milestone and life moment that he might want to achieve. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very important to that you acknowledge that there is that either that sadness, that heartbreak, that not seeing your child live out all of their dreams is difficult to grapple with as a parent. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes. So Jack loves love. In fact, there's a girl at school right now, one of his typical peers, that he has a major crush on. And he talks about marrying her. And even some of his peers kind of tease him about it sometimes. And one of his peers showed me a video that they had taken of Jack proposing to her at school. And he does talk about wanting to be married. He does talk about wanting to go to college. And yeah, these are very real things that Jack wants in his life. And as far as getting married, you know, it's possible. Who knows? Who knows what type of accommodations that he would need? We kind of think, well, if it does happen, they would probably need to live with us. We've thought about building a basement apartment in our home so that we could accommodate that. Going to college, who knows? It's possible. So we're not closing the door on anything. But yes, we also don't know what that would actually look like for him and how it would work. But we want to try and help him in whatever way possible to have some of those things if he wants them. But there is that sadness that is there. Like you said, yes, he did talk about being a dad when he's a dad. And obviously, that is not very likely that that will happen. But you know what? I think we've decided that we will encourage him when he becomes an uncle. We all can't wait for when that's going to happen and what that will look like for him, because I think he's going to be the favorite uncle that all of these little nieces and nephews in the future are going to have. But yeah, I mean, that is the reality of having a child with Down syndrome, is them not being able to participate in those normal progressions of life that, you know, you kind of expect your other kids will naturally progress into. I have one daughter that's married. I have two sons who are not married yet. And obviously that's the expectation, right? That they will move out of the house and they will finish school and they will get married and have a family of their own. And that's just the natural progression of life. And to not have that for Jack, it is a little bit sad to think about. But, you know, my husband said to me recently, he was like, whenever I get into the mindset where I'm like, oh, we're never going to just be the two of us. Like, it's always going to be the three of us. And he always says to me, Kim, I'm excited. I'm excited that we get to do everything with Jack. I think it's going to be awesome. And the second that he says that to me, it changes the wiring in my brain. And then I say, you know what? You're right. It is awesome. We're always going to have a partner in crime here with us at home to keep us company and go to the movies with us. And he'll keep us young forever.
It sounds like there's a lot of recognition of what the realities are of what you could potentially face, but there's also a lot of concerted effort to stay present and stay in the enjoying the moments of now, enjoying the joy that Jack experiences and the milestones that he will encounter as life goes on, as he gets to them, as opposed to thinking of like what would or what would not be down the road. And it sounds like a very healthy mindset, really, for any parent in thinking about their kids, but just in general, when something unexpected happens, to give yourself the space to feel what it is that you're feeling in response to what happened, and then figure out how to move through it. And it sounds like from that initial conversation with the pediatrician to where you all are at right now, you've figured out a way to really embrace those positive moments and recognize that there's no reason that you shouldn't have those positive moments with Jack that you have with your other kids and that any parent has with their kids. And you also get to share his story to encourage and help others. It adds a lot of good into the world.
Well, thank you. I've done a lot of thought work over the years and just trying to like rewire my brain and change the way that I perceive things around me, and not just as far as like Jack and his diagnosis. I work really hard to just have a positive mindset, because I feel like for myself, I go so much farther and I have so many better opportunities in my life when I try to have a positive outlook. But it's really interesting, because if you've talked to any parent in the Down syndrome community, every single one will tell you that they are so grateful for their child. They're so grateful that they get to experience this Down syndrome thing in their lives. And every single one of them will tell you what a positive experience it has been. They'll tell you that it's hard too, but all of them like unanimously will say, this is the best thing that has ever happened to our family. And I think that that's really powerful, that so many families feel that way. And that's the message that they want to get out into the world, that this is the greatest thing that's happened to them and what a blessing it is that they get to experience it.
Thinking about, as you're saying this, and I hope it doesn't sound insensitive, my favorite patients are patients with Down syndrome.
I love that.
I always leave the appointment smiling, because I have such fun interactions with my patients.
It's your joy.
It's great.
I love that so much.
Wonderful spirit in the individuals that I see in my office.
Yes, I love that.
Speaking of positive mindset, you had mentioned this earlier. You're a Zumba instructor. Mm-hmm. I am also a Zumba instructor. So So I am curious how it is for you. You incorporate having your kids in some of your videos when you're dancing and in some of your reels. And I love that because not all kids would be willing to dance with their moms on Instagram. So that's fabulous. How is that for you to share that passion with your kids?
Oh my gosh. I love dancing so much. And I've danced my entire life from the moment I was in my basement, dancing to Paula Abdul and just making up, you know, our own dances to Straight Up. And to high school, I was a cheerleader. And then the way that I got into Zumba was when we had first moved from San Diego to Southern Utah, the gym that I was working at, the owner said to me, "Hey, have you heard about this thing called Zumba?" And I was like, so this was in 2007. Is that right? No, 2008. Have you heard of this thing called Zumba? And I was like, kind of, but I didn't really know what it was. And he said, "Well, it is blowing up in Las Vegas. And if you get certified, I'll give you a class." And I love teaching group fitness so much. And I love dancing that I was like, sure, why not? I'll go to this and figure out this thing called Zumba, whatever it is. And so I went to the certification having never taken a Zumba class. I didn't even know what it was. And I walked into the room, and as a Zumba instructor, you will totally get this. You know how your front row participants are like the ones that like they show up and they make sure they got their spot and they're decked out in their Zumba wear. They know the moves even better than the instructor does. So the certification that I went to however many years ago, it's forever ago, the whole room was filled with individuals like that. And here I was. And I didn't have any Zumba gear on and I didn't know any of the moves, and the master class start, like, I felt like they knew everything that they were doing. They knew all of the dances this instructor was doing for this master class. And I was just trying to keep up and follow along. And I had no idea what they were doing. But at the end, I was like, that was amazing. I had so much fun. That was the best time I've ever had working out. And I got home from that certification and I had 1 month to put together a 1 hour class. I was like, this is insane. I don't know how I'm going to memorize all this choreography in 30 days, but I did it. And they had like advertised on the little kiosk outside the gym that Zumba was coming. And in our small town back then, it was like, you were lucky if you had, you know, 8 participants was a good size class. And so I showed up not even knowing what to expect. And I feel like every single person in the community showed up that day to figure out and to find out what this thing called Zumba was. And so there were probably like 60 people in the room, and I had never taught to a class that big before. Anyway, from that moment on, I was addicted and I haven't stopped teaching, but I like to tell people, because I wasn't pregnant with Jack yet. I became pregnant with him a few months later. And then he was born about a year after I started teaching Zumba. We ended up moving. So I left our community in Southern Utah. We moved to Salt Lake for my husband's job, the one I told you about that he was in Chicago during the training for when I gave birth to Jack. And when we moved up here, I got back into teaching and I was still experiencing all of those feelings of grief and sadness about the diagnosis and then all the health stuff. And we were in the hospital for 2 months. It was just a lot. There was a lot of trauma there and we had moved. And so there's just a lot of changes in our life. And I got back into teaching and I would show up and nobody knew at the time that I had just had this baby born with Down syndrome. They didn't know all of the emotional stuff that I was experiencing. And I could just dance for an hour and I could let it all out. And I honestly tell people now that Zumba healed me, because there's something so powerful about music and dancing for your mind and your soul and your body. And just being able to dance it out, I feel like that's what got me through those really, really hard times. And so when you ask about me, you know, dancing with my kids and all this type of stuff, is that I'm trying to instill that same belief in them that, you know, like, if you're having a hard time, just turn on some music and start dancing, because it's going to change your mindset. It's going to change the way that you feel, and it's going to turn your day around. While I was teaching Zumba, when I was pregnant with Jack, people would say to me, that baby is going to come out with a sombrero on, you know? And I would say, I don't know why, but I really feel like he's going to love music. Everyone who's on my page can witness that Jack loves music. I mean, he loves to sing along. He can't even sing on tune, but he sings to every single song, loud as can be. Like, he'll be in the backyard blasting his iPad and singing at the top of his lungs, and he'll be back there dancing, and people will be like in the neighborhood doing yard work, and they're like, I just loved being outside and hearing Jack singing today. And I'll be like, I hope that they're telling me the truth.
Does he have a favorite really band?
Jack loves, well, it kind
lemonade
of varies.
Mouth, Eric. It's Lemonade Mouth.
Lemonade Mouth. He loves the new Mufasa soundtrack right now. He loves One Direction. He just loves all kind of music. He's a huge Forrest Frank fan right now. In fact, we're taking him to his first concert in a couple of weeks to see Forrest Frank's. Anyway, that'll be fun. There's just so much power in music, and I love it, and I try to instill that in my kids.
My last question for you, a topic that we've explored on the podcast is becoming a part of people's story. Why don't you share with us if there's been a time along sharing Jack's story that you felt like you had the opportunity to become a part of somebody else's story?
There's so many things that I could tell you. I recently was invited to go to the... I attended a new parent breakfast of children who parents who just had children born with Down syndrome. And I was invited to speak at this breakfast. And I was actually really neat because I could see in their eyes the worry and the fear that they were experiencing in that moment. And I wanted to get up in front of them. And I was one of three speakers, and I was the last speaker. And the speakers that had gone before me were still kind of in that grieving stage. And I wanted to get in front of them, and I wanted to give them something to look forward to, something that would give them hope and excitement for the future. And I literally watched their mindset shift as I was talking to them, and as I was showing them pictures and some videos of Jack and telling them what they have to look forward to. And I had so many parents come up to me afterwards and just like hug me and thank me. And as I got to hold their babies and snuggle these little brand new babies with Down syndrome and look at these parents, look them in the eye and say, you're going to be okay. I know it's really hard right now, and I know that you're still grieving, but you're going to be okay. And you have so much to look forward to. I really feel like that was my part in helping shift their story and what their outlook was and what they have to look forward to from here on out.
That's beautiful.
And my last question for you is that for anybody coming across someone with Down syndrome in the world, whether it's school educators or other kids or even adults, people are inherent and hesitant to be more cautious of interacting people that don't look and sound like them. What do you suggest for when people come across somebody with Down syndrome, how to go about just interacting?
So when I talk to the kids at school about this same subject, right, I like to tell them, just make eye contact and wave or say hello or smile. It's just as simple as that. You know, when we've been out with Jack before, you can always tell someone who is really comfortable interacting with someone who has Down syndrome because they do those exact things. They smile at them, they wave at them. And the people who are uncomfortable typically stare and try not to make eye contact. And the other thing that I like to tell kids when I talk to them about Jack, as I said, just find something that you have in common. Jack likes to swim. Do you like to swim? Jack loves Lemonade Mouth. Do you like Lemonade Mouth? Jack loves Slurpees. Have you ever had a Slurpee? He loves Slurpees. Maybe you could go with us to get a Slurpee sometime. And as soon as I explain it that way, they start to realize, you know what, like we're more alike than different. And I think that's what's important, is to just recognize the ways that you are alike so that you can see beyond the differences and you can see beyond maybe like the lack of communication, and you can bridge that with some common ground and finding what you both enjoy and what you love to do.
That's great. Well, Kimberly, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your story, about Jack's story. For somebody like me watching your channel, it brightens my day, but I can also imagine how much comfort and reassurance it provides parents that might be expecting to have a child with a diagnosis or currently have one, Down syndrome or otherwise. So hearing your story, I'm sure, is very comforting. So thank you so much. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, where they can connect with you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It is always my pleasure to share our story and to talk about Jack. I love doing it. So thank you for taking the time to visit with me today. And thank people you. Can find me on Instagram at the Kimberly Dowdell. I'm also on TikTok, Kimberly.Dowdell, and YouTube, Kimberly.Dowdell.
Awesome. And we'll link to those sites in the episode description. Kimberly, thank you so much for taking your time today, sharing your story and Jack's story. And we wish you the best going forward and look forward to seeing the videos that come out in the future.